Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
Your Bibles, we're going to find, again, two passages like we did last week. Both are in the Gospels, so if you'll find Mark chapter 12 first, and then Luke chapter 6, that's kind of going to be our two passages for this morning. We'll continue our study or a look at our core values this morning. And we're going to look at the core value of giving. All right, so Luke chapter 12. So we're going to do so looking at one story that Jesus gives. I'm sorry, did I tell you the wrong passage? Mark chapter 12. I'm sorry, did I say Luke 12? Okay, well, you know, you can't be perfect all the time. So, right? Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12, Luke chapter 6. There we go. I turned to Luke 12 and I was like, this is not correct. All right, so today we're going to be looking at one illustration that Jesus gives and then one teaching that Jesus gives. So we'll be in Mark chapter 12. We'll begin in verse number 41. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to kind of read and talk about this. And I've got a couple of extra little slides that I've put in with some math equations on them. Okay. We're going to do some mathematicianing today, okay? But I promise it won't be too difficult. All right, so here is Jesus. Jesus is with the disciples, and he is, it's during Holy Week. That's kind of the context of Mark 12. And Jesus is in kind of the middle of Holy Week. It's probably around Tuesday of Holy Week. And Jesus has been teaching in the temple or is near the temple because he sits down in the temple, and that's where our story picks up, okay? So let's begin reading in verse number 41. And he, that's Jesus, sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums. Let's stop right there, all right? Stop right there, all right? Now, let's talk about that. Now, treasury boxes. There's a few kind of words or phrases that we need to get our minds around what's going on. So Jesus at this time is in the court of the women, court of women, which means all Israelites were able to go into this court. The temple is basically sectioned off into different parts. So you have the court of the Gentiles. Anybody and everybody can enter that part. It's the largest part. Then inside of that, you have the court of women. That means all Israelite women and all Israelite men can be in that part. And then further in is the court of Israel. And that's just for Israelite men. And then inside of that is the court of priests. And then inside of that is, you know, like the temple proper, and then only the priests can go in certain parts. And then there's the Holy of Holies, which only the high priest can go in. You kind of decreasing number of entrance, percentage of entrance. So we're in the biggest portion that all the Israelites can go in. And historians tell us that there were 13 treasury boxes set up around in the court of women. All right, and these treasury boxes, now I realized this morning that I need to clarify this when I say this next thing. They were shaped like trumpets. Now, not a modern trumpet that has all the curly stuff in it, but like a tube, you know, that has a flared out end. And they were shaped like trumpets, or probably more like, because Israelites used ram's horns called shofars, so they were probably shaped more like that. And then obviously they had a box at the bottom. And so as people would go by, they would put money in it, and that was for the operation of the temple. So part of it would be every year, every month. male in Israel 20 years and older was required to pay a temple tax. So that may be like, hey, this may be one of the times you're in Jerusalem and you're like, hey, got to pay the temple tax. So you'd go drop your money in, or maybe you'd give an extra tithe or an offering to the Lord. And so Jesus watched, look what it says. He was watching people. So just like you do, he was people watching. Okay? And he noticed that many rich people put in large sums of money. Okay? Now get the picture. If you're, now remember, it's Passover week, so there's a lot of people. And when a lot of people put money into one container, what does it sound like? Cling, 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 cling. Kind of like VBS when we do the buckets, and they're metal and it's really loud, right? That's kind of the deal. And if you put in a large sum of money, is the sound going to be small or large? Okay, let's try again. Is the sound going to be small or large?
Large.
There you go. It's going to make a lot of noise. And when people hear a lot of noise, what do they do? I see it every Sunday. Somebody comes in the back door. You can't even see the back door. And you're, who's coming in, right? Somebody, right? Okay? But anyway, whenever we hear a large noise, we automatically turn around, right? And so when people, this is what was going on. All right, but look what our verse tells us next in verse 42. And a poor widow came and put in, we're going to stop after this first two, and we're going to do some math. A poor widow came in and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. Now that sounds really like, how does two coins, because in our mind, like, how do two coins make a penny? That doesn't make, what are, like, some of your translations may have, like, the actual lepta or something like that, and you're like, what is that equal today? So guess what? We're going to figure that out. All right, Ren, will you pull up the first white slide that, it's not the one, yes, there we go, that says two small copper coins. Here we go, math 101. Now, here's what I did. Each of those small copper, remember how she had two, right? Each one of them, look here first. Each one of them is equal to 1/128th of a day's wage. So if you put two of those together, she has 1/64th of a day's wage. Okay? Now, you may be thinking, how much is a day's wage? Well, in their culture, it was one denarius. But we don't pay you in one denarius today. So here's what I did. I got on the Google, and I Googled median income for the state of Georgia. The newest statistics they had were from 2022. So here we go. The median income, individual income in the state of Georgia is $35,753. So that's the number we're going to use today in this illustration and in another one later. All right. So if you take the median income and divide it by 260, which is 52 working weeks of 5 days a week, that gives you 260, you will get that a day's wage based off the median income is $138 per day. Okay? That's a day's wage at the median income level. Now, if you divide that by 64, because she had 1/64th of a day's wage, she would have given the equivalent of $2.15. Okay? Can we agree that if you go to Walmart, you can spend $2.15 just walking in? Right? I mean, you don't even have to go far to spend $2.15. I think the last time I was in there, you could have got 4 ears of corn. Right? I mean, I'm sure you got other stuff, but the corn was right there, 50 cents a piece. So that's how much she gave. Okay, Ren, you can go back to our verses. So verse 42 says, and a widow came in, that means a beggar, she's a beggar woman, put in two small copper coins, $2.15 in our money. Now look what Jesus says. All right, verse 43. He says, and he called his disciples, the 12, he calls them around and he said, hey, truly I say to you, this poor woman, he singles her out of the throngs of people and says, that woman has put in more than all those other people who dropped in a bunch of money. Now, let's just take a step back and say, how can that be, right? Because the text clearly says they put in what? Large sums of money, and she put in very small sum of money. So the question then is, how can Jesus say she put in more than them when mathematically she didn't put in more than them? Well, Jesus answers the question in the last verse, which will give us our first giving principle. For they all, here's what he says, for they, that's the large sum of money people, the rich, they put in, they contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty, and here's the key point, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. Now, here's Jesus's point. Jesus's point is this lady, she put in all she had to live on. In other words, she deemed it more important to give this money to the Lord because she estimated that God could provide for her better than she could provide for herself, even if she had kept the $2.15. Right? Now, if she would have taken a poll of her friends and her people, and she would have said, hey, friends, should I give the $2.15 or should I use it to feed myself? Everybody would have said, hey, you should probably keep it because that's all you got. But she estimated that it would be better for her to give than it would be to keep it because she trusted in the Lord more than she trusted in her ability to provide for herself. Which leads us to giving principle number one. Generous giving shows a dependency on God to do what only He can do. This isn't the first time we've seen this. There's two other illustrations that I thought of really quick this week, really easy. One is from 2 Kings chapter 17. The prophet Elijah meets this widow, another widow from Zarephath, right? From Zarephath. And her and her son are gathering sticks because she has enough oil and flour. That's it, to make two small loaves, and that's going to be their last meal, and then they're going to die of starvation because there's a drought and that's all she has. And Elijah, by word of the Lord, says, hey, if you'll make me something to eat, I'll promise you God will provide for you through the duration of this drought. And she's like, okay. And she does. And so she provides Elijah with food and then a place to live. And guess what? The text tells us, for the remainder of the time that the drought lasts, her oil never runs out and her flour never empties. Why? Because she estimated that it was better to depend on the Lord than it was for her to try to provide for herself. There's another lady in Matthew 26 that occurs around this same time period during Holy Week or close to it, where she breaks an alabaster jar and anoints Jesus' feet. And Jesus says it's in preparation for his burial, for what's coming up, for the cross, right? And then everybody around her like is horrified that she would waste this extravagant amount of money on Jesus. And they all are like, hey, it would have been better to sell it and get the money and give the money to the poor. But Jesus says, no. Right? She was more dependent on the Lord to provide for her than what she could do for herself. And so giving principle number one is, when we choose to be generous givers, it shows a dependency on God to do what only He can do. Which, hey, Ray. This is like, it might be on your outline, but here's kind of the backside of this. This also displays why God detests greed and stinginess so much. Have you ever thought about why God doesn't like greed and why the Bible detests and has God talk so much about greed and stinginess against it? Because stinginess, keeping for yourself, and greed is this: God, I don't need you. I can do this on my own. I can provide for myself better than you can provide for me. Generous giving displays the opposite of that, which is a true dependency on the Lord. All right, so that's giving principle number one. All right, giving principle number one is generous giving shows a dependency on God to do what only He can do in our lives. All right, now let's turn to Luke chapter 6, not chapter 12. Luke chapter 6. In Luke chapter 6, we find Jesus teaching the Sermon on the Plain, which is corollary to Matthew's maybe more popular Sermon on the Mount. There's some similar material in each, a little bit different. There's some that's different, and so it's probably Jesus taught both. They're probably not relaying the same message or the same point, but Jesus probably taught the Sermon on the Mount on a mount, and he probably taught the Sermon on the Plain on a plane, right? That's why they're called that. But in verses 37 and through 38, Jesus is giving, much like he did in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is giving what we would call ethics of the kingdom. In other words, that's how to live for God in the world. And he makes some interesting statements here in verses 37 and 38. He gives some do's and don'ts. All right, so let's read it. He says, "Judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." Now look, here's where giving comes in. Verse 38, here's what he says. "Give, and it will be given to you." Now, notice he's going to add some extra material that's directly related not only to these in general, but to giving specific. Look what he says. He says, "Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put in your lap. For the measure you use it will be measured back to you." Now, again, this generally applies to all of those, but specifically today, we're highlighting giving. So let's talk about this. So Jesus says that if you are willing to give, then you are opening yourself up to receive in return. But then he uses this very key indicator of how that relationship works. Look at the last sentence. "For the measure you use, it will be measured back to you." All right, so let me give you an illustration. For example, if you are a generous giver, if you are generous in giving, Jesus says you will be generous in receiving. If you are stingy in giving, you will be stingy in receiving. Now, I'm not going to make you throw your hands up, but if I were to ask you here today, who would like to receive generously? Every one of you would put your hands up. Just as every kindergartner would, just as every middle schooler would, just as everybody in the world would, right? But what does the text tell us? In order to generously receive, you must be willing to generously give. See, our problem is we want to give in teaspoons and we want to receive in pounds. Right? What is the least I can do and get the maximum amount of return? Right? That we're all like, we all come out of the womb with that mentality. What's the least I can do? Now, in another context, it may sound like this. What's the least I can do? And be obedient. And here, we're talking about giving and receiving. What's the least I can do? And God will still bless me beyond measure. Right? And Jesus says, that's not how it works. Jesus says, the degree to which you give is the degree to which you receive. So in other words, if you give in teaspoons, you receive in teaspoons. That's how God's economy works. Now, look at what he says in the middle. So he says, "Given, it will be given to you," and then he explains how that metric's going to be, how that will be given to you is going to work. But look in the middle. He is going to describe to you what it is like to receive generously. And he gives an agricultural illustration of pouring material, grain, into a sack. If you have a sack and it's open and you pour grain into it, it will, for whatever reason, it will build a pyramid. It will fill out at the bottom, but eventually it will pyramid up. And if you stop pouring at the top of the pyramid, the bag isn't full because it's just created this mound, this pyramid. But if you sit there and you shake the bag, it settles all back down, and then you pour more in and it will pyramid again, and then you shake it and then you can pour more in. And usually if we're pouring something into another container, you're going to get it up, say a sack of grain, you're going to get it up, and then at some point you're going to stop so that you can close the bag up. But Jesus says generous receiving from God doesn't go that way. He says, what does it say? Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, then he goes on. He's saying it's not just filled up so that you can close the sack, but it is running over. It is spilling out of the container. In other words, generous receiving means you generously receive more than you generously gave. And so the second principle is aligned around that idea that if you and I are generous givers, we will receive back more than we could ever imagine. But it is determined by the amount we give, will determine the amount that we receive. It's a reciprocal, yes, that's the right word, reciprocal relationship. So if you and I want to have good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, and all that kind of jazz, then that's what we have to be willing to give generously as well. Okay, you with me? Point number one, generous giving helps us depend on God. Point number two, the measure which we give and receive is reciprocal to one another. And look, can we be all honest? We all want to get that middle part. We all want to get pressed down, good measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over. But Jesus is clear, in order to receive that, you got to be willing to give in that manner as well. All right, now, I want to stop here before we go to application, and I'll give you one quick note, and I want everybody to hear me on this, okay? While the first illustration does involve money, the second one does not, okay? So listen carefully. I want you to listen to what Jesus is not definitively saying in this passage here. Jesus is not definitively saying that if you give $50 generously, that God is going to return that with $1,000. Do you hear me? That is not what Jesus is saying. Does Jesus say, if you give money to the church, then God will give you money in return? Does he say that? He does not say that. What does he say? Give and it will be given to you. So preacher, you mean if I generously give money, then that means I may generously receive something else in return? Absolutely, it may. Okay? So what is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying if you give generously, you will receive generously. That's what he's saying. He's putting no conditions of if you give a lot of money, God's going to give you a lot of money in return. So what does that mean? If you hear any internet preacher, I used to hear him on the TV, right? On the certain channel, will be left nameless. And they'll, boy, if you'll just sow a seed of faith. Oh. And they'd have nice swooped over hair, look like $1 million. You know, and then come to find out years later, they used that seed of faith to buy a $20 million private jet so they could do the Lord's work. Right? But what would they do on TV when I was a kid? Boy, they'd promise you, God will bless you. And then they'd show like images of wealth, you know, and all that. It wouldn't be images of people loving on you, you know, and helping you fix your car, you know. Right? It wouldn't be, you know, folks bringing you vegetables in the summer. Right? Because that's not how God returns. No. But what is this passage saying? If we generously give, we will generously receive. What will we receive? Jesus don't say. He leaves that part open. So here's the point. If anybody definitively answers that what you will receive, red flag, right? That is very quickly into health, wealth, and prosperity, which is not the gospel of Jesus. Jesus clearly says, if you give generously, you will receive generously. If you give stingily, you will receive stingily. But he doesn't qualify what the receiving will be. Okay? All right, so we got two principles. Number one, generous giving shows a dependency on God. Right? Two, if we want to receive generously, we got to be willing to give generously. If we want to receive stingily, well, then I don't think any of us do, but that's how that works, right? Reciprocal relationship. That what you give to the degree is what you receive. Now, comes to the point of the sermon where we've got to apply this lesson to our lives. And there are a multitude of ways that we can apply this lesson. I'm going to give you three, okay? Number one. All right. The first one. Whenever we talk about giving, we automatically think of money. But that is not the only way in which we can give. And that is shown across the scriptures, right? Yes, money and material possessions, probably a better way to say it, is a part of giving. It's not the only part of giving. We can generously give time. What did we talk about last week? Talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. You can be just as stingy with those as you can with money. And Jesus is calling us, God is calling us, the scriptures are calling us to be generous across the board of our lives, not just in one area. In fact, the most generous people I have ever known, they are generous in every aspect of their life, not just one. Because generosity is a lifestyle that you live. It's not just a one-time decision you make here or there. So, for example, I had a guy at a previous church, super smart guy, did very well in his career. He's owned multiple businesses, bought and sold multiple businesses. And I was a lowly youth pastor, and man, I was struggling with, I don't even remember what it was at this point. And he just happened to come by the church that day during the week. And he popped in my office, and man, I unloaded. You know, it's kind of one of those where you just got a lot on you, and you just need somebody to vent or unload to. And I just went, bleh. Here it is. And he sat there for the entire morning. Mind you, he's got businesses to run. Like multi-million dollar businesses, plural, to run. And he's in there with a lowly youth pastor guy. I don't even know what we talked about. I don't remember. But what I do remember is he gave, he could have been acquiring new business. He could have been acquiring more whatever in his business. He could have been responding to vital emails. He could have been helping with personnel decisions. He could have been pushing product, making telephone calls. But what was he doing? Sitting with a lowly youth pastor trying to help me through whatever I was struggling with for hours. He didn't give me no money, but he did give me time, wisdom, and knowledge. And in that moment, I needed that more than I needed money. Right? See, generous giving doesn't have to be just material possessions. It can be, it needs to be, but it doesn't have to be just that. It is a lifestyle of giving talents, abilities, gifts, skills, and material possessions. Let me give you another example. That's broad. Let me get more specific. Let me give you another example. We've talked about it a little bit. We hadn't talked about it in a while. Here's an example of a way you can be generous. Tipping. Now, listen to me very carefully, okay? Because I'm going to explain to you not how you think, but how I thought about tipping. Okay? So listen. I'm not saying you, if this hits you, it hits you, but I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. Okay? For a long portion of my life, I thought tipping was associated with service. In other words, if you get good service, you get a good tip. Right? That's not how tipping should work for the believer. You're like, what? Huh? No. Your generosity in tipping tells me more about you and less about the person serving you. Right? Because we should be generous because the Lord has been overly generous with us. Listen, you might not know. We talked to a waitress one day. It's Sonny's in Athens. Our service was good, not spectacular, but good. And we asked our waitress that day, hey, can we pray for you? We're about to pray for our food. Literally broke down in tears. You want to know why? Her mother just got diagnosed with cancer. You may never know what your waiter or waitress is going through that day. And your service may be awful, but you would be awful if you were in their shoes. Not just because they're waiting tables, but because what's going on in their life. And so one way you can be generous givers is to generously tip your server, no matter how good or bad the service is. Because you would be just as bad that day if you were going through some of the junk of your life and you had to wait tables. Can we all agree on that? And let's be real. Let's be real. What is it? An extra $2 or $3 usually? Maybe $5? I mean, I'm sure we could probably round that up. Scrounge that up. I mean, it's $2 or $3 extra. From them looking at you and going, versus, oh wow. Because let's be honest, you know they do that. Right? Look. So I'm gonna pick on Bob for just a second, okay? I promise it'll be good. So I promise it'll be good. But listen, there's a good point. So I took somebody out to eat. And I tipped. And if I take somebody out to eat and I use our church credit card as a ministry expense, I tip well. I tip well. You wanna know why? Because I don't want them to look at the back of the card and see Valley Grove Baptist Church and go, that cheapskate. You want to know why? Not because it looks bad on me. It looks bad on y'all. So Bob and I were talking, and he was like, wow, man, I would have never thought about that. He's like, just never thought about it. But the reality is, it not only reflects me, it reflects you. And it's y'all walking around that everybody's going, boy, I hope none of the sorry folks of Valley Grove come, because if their pastor don't tip well, I bet they sure don't. Tipping. You can be generous. It's a couple dollars more. All right, here's the last one. Now, we're going to talk about giving. We got to talk about tithing. Okay? Finance team gave me the, come on. Right? Yeah, right? So, let's talk about tithing just for a moment, okay? So, listen. Remember, generous giving is more than just money, but it must include that as well, okay? So look, tithing, listen, I'm very clear on this. Tithing specifically refers to giving a tenth of material possessions, okay? So in today's world, most of you are not going to, well, some of you probably would and think it was funny, but then we'd have to do something with a cow in the front yard. Right? No names will be mentioned. But rarely do we tithe produce and animals and livestock and lumber to the church, right? Because it's just like, what do you do with it, right? So tithing in our culture specifically refers to cash money. All right, so let's just... So tithing, when you read tithing in the Bible, because I've had people say this to me, well, I don't tithe money, I tithe time. No, that ain't how it works. Tithing is extra, time is extra, tithing is 10% of your income, okay? Income, assets, however you want to look at it, okay? 10% of your paycheck. That's what the word literally means in the scripture. Tithe means tenth. It is a tenth of your income, okay? So, now, also, in all honesty, want to be fair, that's what the word means. The word tithe, in that sense, is used more in the Old Testament and doesn't really appear in the New Testament in that context. In the New Testament, it talks about giving. Okay, notice in the passage we read, it talks about giving. It doesn't say tithe and a tithe will be given to you. It says give and it will be given to you. So, some people would like to say, oh, well, the New Testament, you know, we don't live in the Old Testament. The New Testament says just give generously and so I'll give whatever I want to. Okay. My response to that is anecdotally, okay, so you're going to let Old Testament people who don't know about Jesus give more than you do. Okay, Cool. If you want to go by that, I'll go back to the you want to give with a teaspoon and then you want to expect to get pounds in return, right? So for me, a starting place for believers is 10% of your income. When we talk about tithing and generous giving to the church, which is should be a part of every believer's life, that's the baseline, 10%. All right. Now, I know some of you, well, let me just hit this one first before I make that comment. So some of you are now in your mind, you're doing the math. You know, and you've got your paycheck and you're like, well, you're going to ask the question that I asked at 14 years old when I got my first paycheck from a job I had at the church. And I'm going to tell you exactly what my mom and dad told me, okay? So don't get mad at me. You can get mad at them the next time they're here. All right, so look, here's what I told them. I said, hey, mom and dad, because tithing was a thing in our life, in our family. And I said, hey, I got this check. And they were like, hey, you going to tithe? I went, yeah, absolutely. I said, now, what these numbers, they're a bunch of numbers on here. Which one of them do I tithe off of? And so then I got an education on gross and net. And so I said, so which one of these do I tithe off? The bigger one or the littler one, right? And my mom and dad said to me, well, what do you want God to bless? All of it or part of it? And I was like, well, all of it, I reckon. So I wrote my little $30 check out and right? After the government had done half my money. But anyway, that's another story. So I learned a lot in that first paycheck. And I learned about taxes and gross and net and all that. So anyway, so some of you are sitting here doing the math in your head. And I'll say to you what my mom and dad said to me. Do you want God to bless part of it or all of it? You can answer that question, right? So now, some of you are going to have the same face I just made from when I was 14 because you're thinking what I'm thinking. That's a lot of money. 10%? Pastor, that's a lot of money. And let's face it, the majority of us in here are adults. And so some of you right now, you're doing the calculation in your mind and you're thinking, here's what I make. Here's what 10% is. Whoa. I don't have that just floating around out there, you know, to just do whatever I want to with because my money's already all allocated. Because let's be real. Most of us in here today live paycheck to paycheck. Let's just be real. And so most of us, we already have all our money allocated between house payment and gas and insurance and car and all utilities and all that and other stuff, insurances and all that. We've already got our money allocated. You're probably sitting there thinking, whoa, that's a lot of money. So here's what I'm going to do today. I understand where you're at. I want to give you an on-ramp of how to start tithing this year. All right, Ren, pull up our other slide for us. Here we go. You may be sitting here today and say, hey, I don't have that much. Let me give you an on-ramp. Start with one. 1%. Start with one. Let me give you an example. We're going to use the same number. Same median income. There it is. $35,753. Some of you may make less than that. Some of you may make more than that. So this is just an average, okay? 1% of $35,753 rounded up is $358. And you may say right now, hey, Pastor, I ain't got $358 today. I got you. That's $358 over the year. If you make that median income, it's $358 over the course of the entire year. Now, let's divide that out. If you want to look at that monthly, it's $29.83 a month. If it's weekly, it's $6.88 a week. Now, hold on a second. I got something for you. My tablet was being wonky today, so I had to pull it up on my phone here. If I can. All right. Because what I'm about to share with you are some things that you probably already spend $6 on every single week. I've got things for the ladies and for the men. Hold on. Everybody's a victim here today. Okay? All right, here we go. You ready? Not really. An 8-count Chick-fil-A nugget meal is $8.69. Criminal, right? Well, if you don't like chicken, then you can eat at McDonald's, because a double cheeseburger meal is $7.09. Now, I know some of y'all dip in here, and that's whatever. That's when you and the Lord, a can of Skol Wintergreen is $7.48. A Starbucks white chocolate mocha is $6.45. Newport menthol cigarettes, $10.38. Deer corn, $8.99. A bottle of wine is $10 to $20 on the cheap end at Walmart. So then I was like, that's a lot of menly stuff. What about ladies? So I asked Holly, a decent average tube of lipstick is $7 to $10. Olive in June long-lasting nail polish, I have no idea what that is $9. And then she also added, you don't have to get a cute t-shirt for every season at school, verbatim. Or sweatshirt, $15 to $30, depending on what you get. Here's my point. You may say, well, I don't, none of them apply to me. Okay, that's fine. My point in doing this is to show you that there's probably something in your life that if you're not tithing today, there's one or two things that if you said, hey, I'm going to forego going to McDonald's. You know how much it cost us to go to McDonald's? $45. Like that. Because we have three adults eating and three quarters of an adult. So basically, if we, like in this scenario, if we weren't tithing and wanted to start, it would just be saying, hey, we're not going to go to McDonald's one extra time this month. That's not that hard, right? It's finding ways in your life that you can say, hey, I can do without, because I'm going to depend on God to provide for me better than I could provide for myself if I continue to do blank. Right? And then look at me. You start out with 1%. And then if you get a bill paid off, if you get a raise at work, right? If you get a cost of living raise at the beginning of next year, or you get a step raise at work at some point this year, that's like free money, right? Because you've already built your budget and you didn't account for that money. So then you just roll that in and you can move it up to 2 or 3%. And in a couple years, you're tithing more than you ever imagined you would be able to. Because you just decided to, this was the year that I'm going to start living and giving generously. And here's the reality. I want to end with this. Because my goal in us talking about giving, and specifically talking about tithing, because I do believe tithing is truly fundamental for us as believers. Listen to me. This is why we will always talk about it here. Because it's not just for you. Remember that story I told when I got that first big paycheck, when I was 14 years old, and we talked about tithing? The reason we talked about that then was because my grandparents, years before, at Second Baptist Church in Warner Robins, at the old church, made a conscious decision that they were going to be tithers every opportunity that they have. I remember me and my mom talking about how my dad's parents were adamant about tithing. So then my dad and my mom were adamant about tithing. So that they taught me and my sister, even when we didn't have money, when we got older, when I was probably in middle school, they would give us every so often a dollar to put in the little pink envelope to put in the offering plate. And then when we started the building campaign to build our family life center, they'd give me another dollar to put in the white envelope, and I would put them in there. I would put them in the offering plate as they didn't put them in for me. I would put it in. as it came by. So that now that we talked to Tucker and Tanner about tithing, that's not on me and Holly. That's on my grandparents who started it way back when. See, my goal in us talking about tithing is not just so that you will reap the joyous benefits of tithing, but so that you, so that 50, 60 years later, your grandkids or your great-grandkids will say, hey man, I give today because my grandparents and my great-grandparents were adamant about tithing to the church. Because the reality is, you and I are literally here in this place, in this spot, this morning, because people who long have been in heaven decided they were going to give generously. Two closing things. First, Holly and I have graciously been a recipient of all of that giving for the last 8.5 years. And we'll forever be thankful because both of our, because of their gifts way back 50, 60, 70 years ago, and your giving, both of our boys have come to know Christ here because people chose to give and gave and are giving. And listen to me, close on this one. I have never, I rarely use that word, never preached someone's funeral or been at their hospital bed when they've been on death's door. Listen to me. I have never heard a single person say, I wish I would have given less to the church. Never. I wish I would have spent more time doing blank or blank. I have never heard anybody regret any money they gave to the church. Now, I don't know. Listen, I got another one. I don't know how you have, this is another thing. This is free. I don't know how you have your end of life stuff set up, but let me tell you what Holly and I did. Several years ago, we went to a retreat for pastors and wives. And we didn't have a will. And we thought, huh, probably time to get one. And so you know what we have written in our will that I would encourage you to do? The moment we're out of here and we're in glory with God and all of our accounts are settled, whatever church we're a member of, even in death, they're going to get a gift out of whatever little bit we got. So that the work of God, so that people can experience what we've experienced with their boys like we've experienced with ours. So that they can one day say, hey, this is the place where my kids came to know Christ because people generously gave. So what is generous giving? Number one, it is a dependency on God for him to do what only he can do. Second principle is the measure to which you give is the measure to which you receive. How do we do that? Talents, abilities, gifts, and skills, monetary assets, income. Generosity should impact all of those areas. Tipping, we should be generous tippers. And we should be generous tithers to the local church. And if you're not doing that right now, start with 1%. I promise you, it will be a blessing for you and for generations to come.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.